Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
Today's episode is the State of the Union for Women, Technology, and Wall Street. It's the end of the first quarter of 2016 as I record this. The global stock market has been sideways, down, and generally more volatile than our short-term minds can enjoy. In a world where we seem to rely more and more on technology and modernization to solve all of our problems, how are we actually doing when it comes to preparing for the future, living fulfilled lives, and staying in touch with what's important to us? So today we are going to talk about trends in the data. I'm going to share with you snippets of a recent interview with Holly Fagan of BlackRock Investments to talk about their recent investor survey results. And I'm going to share with you some of the best and worst things happening out there with women and wealth. I'm going to reveal some surprisingly sobering news uncovered by this BlackRock survey and help you understand what it means for us in the bigger picture. We're going to talk about a very disappointing trend that it seems nearly three quarters of us women have fallen victim to. Discuss those pitfalls so you can avoid them on your path to financial freedom. We're going to talk about why women seem more susceptible to bad advice than men are. Of course, men are not impervious, and give you some really clear action steps to make sure you're not part of the misinformed majority who this new data tells us believe they are doing the right thing, but are definitely on the wrong track. If there are women in your life that you care about, you're going to want to send them this episode. You can just forward it to them right there from your podcast app. Just click the three little dots next to the title of the episode and click share episode or send them a quick text. Hey, you're so money. You need to check this out. And then link to hillaryhendershot.com/11. They can link right to the show from there. So BlackRock Investments is an American global investment firm. It is the world's largest asset manager with over $4.5 trillion in assets. Each year, BlackRock conducts an investor pulse survey. And this year, I talked with Holly Fagan of BlackRock, who helped me analyze their survey results specifically from the perspective of what it tells us about women investors. Holly is a managing director, and she's head of BlackRock's dedicated registered investment advisor business. And as you can see, on the surface, things in this survey look very positive. Hi, Holly. Welcome to Profit Boss Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Holly, in general, I'd say the most recent global investor pulse survey from BlackRock puts a positive spin on what women are thinking and feeling and doing to prepare themselves for retirement. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. So we found through our recent global investor pulse survey that about a little over half or 51% of women that we surveyed reported feeling very positive about their financial future. And that's an improvement over the survey results that we found last year, which was much less than that.
Now, what are the data points that support that positive assertion?
Well, some of it is surveying around their confidence level. And so 42% said that they are confident that they are making the right savings and investment decisions compared to the same population that was surveyed last year, who said they were only 34% confident that they were making the right saving and investment decisions.
That's a pretty big jump. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's probably a couple things. I think that some of it is related to all the information that's available on the internet right now. We find not just with women, but when you look at the millennials especially, they're using the internet as a source of information. They're not investing per se on the internet, but they're definitely taking advantage of all the information that exists as they try to qualify or pre-purchase. And it's, you know, it's no different than when they're shopping online for a car or shopping for a pair of shoes. You know, they may or may not purchase online, but they're certainly collecting a lot of information, and we see the same thing with investing. And so I think it's a combination of them feeling like they're empowered by becoming more educated and having access to the information. I think on top of that, you know, they're looking at what's happening in their households, and many women are focused on short-term. Men tend to be, at least in our survey results, their male cohorts are focused more on long-term investing and accumulation of wealth, whereas women are more focused on their family's budget and things in the very short term. And so when you think about, you know, the positive impact that low oil prices, low gas prices have had on American households, that very much follows through, I think, to some of the positive confidence that we see here with women who tend to be managing the budgets of their households.
So they're feeling the flexibility of having a significant portion of their budget positively impacted by outside forces. And isn't it funny that just a few years ago, you know, we were predicting oil prices to go through the roof, and everyone and the sentiment on that end was so pessimistic and negative even. But that is precisely the information that's misleading, because you're going to hear very quickly that this new increased confidence is short-sighted and even unjustified.
Yeah, very short-sighted. And I think that while they may be feeling more confidence because they're the person responsible for their household budget, I think that the backdrop and the volatility in the market overall for men and for women investors has definitely influenced their behavior. And an example of that is looking at how much each of those populations have invested in cash. So it's substantial. When you look at least to the survey results and the population of investors that we surveyed, for men, 60% of their portfolio was in cash, whereas women, 71% of their portfolio was in cash.
Oh,
so
my.
That suggests to me that, you know, they're still significantly concerned about the backdrop of the market overall, which also I think explains why they're concerned about retirement, which is more of a long-term goal. And, you know, whether they realize it or not, it's going to be very difficult for them to achieve the lifestyle and retirement that they may be accustomed to or may long for when they have so much of their portfolio still sitting in cash.
Oh, well, you sound so let me say, I would speak much more strongly about that. I would say a portfolio in cash is never going to get you where you want to go. I appreciate your being politically correct there, but yeah, that speaks to fear to me. Typically, when people put their money in cash, they have a very bad outlook for the future of the market, per se.
Yes.
Okay, wow. You heard me react when she said that, and that was my radio voice. I was floored when Holly said that 71% of women have their money in cash, and yet we're feeling significantly more confident about our futures. It just doesn't make any sense. And this is really the crux of it. How can we be so confident about the future when we're sitting on the sidelines, afraid to invest? Sitting in cash is a big deal. 99% of the time, it's a huge mistake, but people do it when they're afraid. People consistently violate the number one rule of investing, which is buy low and sell high, and they flee from declining stock markets. They lock in losses and sit in cash while the market rebounds. It's a tale as old as Wall Street time, and technology is not solving it. So this is the core theme of the episode today. What is all this modern technology and development doing for us? I live in Silicon Valley, and boy, do we love our technology here. I mean, in a world where we can print three-dimensional human organs and very real developments are being made in the realm of artificial intelligence. I mean, heck, my husband and I recently leased a Tesla, and the thing drives and parks itself. It even comes to get you when you call it. And yet, doesn't it seem that technology does not solve for some of the most critical human issues? Issues like relationship to self, communication, relationships with other people, our money behavior. I mean, just look at one of the topics human beings spend the most money on, and that's losing weight. ABC News reported that 100 million dieters spent $20 billion trying to lose weight, but most dieters never lose a pound, or if they do, they rebound to well above where they started from. And that's because it matters how you behave. And what we know about money is that there is a physicality to money. You handle money physically in particular ways. This mostly includes earning, spending, saving. But to be honest with you, most people do not have an earning problem. Most people have a spending problem. And that's all internal. It's psychological. And so far, we don't have technology that allows us to program ourselves to eat less or spend less. Another thing we know is that we fall victim to psychological traps. And one of the most financially destructive things people do to themselves is because they don't understand the markets and investing, and they choose to go it alone or don't get good advice, they interact with their investments in ways that make even what could be or what would be a highly performing portfolio nearly useless. I'm going to give you a big caveat emptor about this episode, Profit Boss. Right now, you should know nothing I say in this episode or any episode of Profit Boss Radio should be misconstrued as personal investing advice to you, okay? The right investing strategy for you has to be customized for your own timeline, savings rate, life situation, and ability and willingness to tolerate risk. So do not go buy investments after you listen to this. If you want good investment advice, I offer that to the wealth management clients I work with. And if you want a second opinion on what you've been doing so far, just shoot us an email at Hillary@HillaryHendershot.com. Getting back to my example of how people make mistakes, for the period from 1992 to 2014, all you had to do to earn about a 9.85% annual return in your stock market portfolio, and those are amazing returns, all you had to do was buy an S&P 500 index fund and not sell it. But what we know from industry research is that the average investor during that same 22-year time period earned just 5.19%. Why? Because we get scared. We think we're smarter than the market. We think we know what's coming, and we sell out. And let me put a price tag on fear for you. If you started with $100,000, didn't add a dollar to that portfolio, and you got the higher return, the 9.85%, because you bought that large cap index fund and you didn't sell it, you had about $655,000 after 20 years, 22 years. That's a 555% return. That does not suck. Now, if you did what most of your friends and neighbors did and you tinkered with it and tried to avoid down markets by selling out, or you sat in cash because somebody on CNN told you to, or some guy at a cocktail party said he was, and you only earned 5.19%, that $100,000 wound up being only $275,000. You cost yourself 50% of your potential ending value, more than 50%. And if you started with more than $100,000, you can just magnify those losses. I mean, returns are compound, right? So that means for folks in the survey data, if you started with a $500,000, $500,000, they lost or missed out on $2 million over that 22-year investment period. This is happening in the majority of households. That's what the survey data tells us, not the BlackRock survey. I'm now talking about the Dalbar survey of average investors. The average investor isn't earning anywhere near what's possible for them using pretty basic modern investment best practices. That is a huge deal. And it explains why investors are so disenchanted with the stock market. But more importantly, it clearly justifies the value of good advice. It's why people choose to surround themselves with a good tax person and a good lawyer and a good wealth manager. And it's why the new era of wealth managers like myself call ourselves, among other things, behavioral advisors. It's simple. If you have a good behavioral wealth advisor, you don't make costly mistakes. It sounds so simple when I say it that it's easy to not really take notice. But when I put a price tag on it to the tune of $2 million in assets, that's real, tangible value. There's a phase of life where you're earning lots of money, when financial mistakes can be recovered from. But there's also a phase of life when mistakes like that are life altering. And I would say for most people, $2 million is life altering. You can't recover from a mistake like that. And it's this amazing time for women right now when it comes to managing successful financial lives. I mean, for years, the media has been reporting that women are coming into our own when it comes to managing household budgets and purchasing decisions. And the women's lib movement is passing the torch from generation to generation. We also know that there are fewer and fewer limitations on what women can do. There's a very real possibility that we'll have our first female president in the United States this year. Women are earning more and in many industries moving toward parity with our male counterparts. There is no limit on what you can do if you're a business owner. But even more importantly, according to Business Insider, women now control 51% of personal wealth, and that's about $14 trillion in the United States. We are responsible to steward our family fortunes, to take care of ourselves and our children and our families and our communities and our future generations. And I have personally spoken with hundreds, if not thousands, of women in cities across the country about their mindsets and management habits for that wealth. And to be totally honest with you, sometimes it is really dismaying for me. Let me tie back to what I started with, and that's the value add of technology. You heard Holly say that women are confident because we rely on advice from the internet. We're informed buyers, or we think we are. The barriers to publish information on the internet are practically non-existent. Anyone can publish an article on the internet. They can give investment advice or make claims about the stock market or predictions or tout the benefits of some investment product that they ultimately get paid to sell, using aspirational language to promote get-rich-quick schemes disguised as complex real estate strategies. And the worst are the doomsayers. The people who call themselves economists, who are screaming at you that the entire system is headed for destruction, the stock market is a Ponzi scheme, and essentially just doing everything they can to scare the living shit out of you. I read a lot of financial articles, and I'll tell you, about a third of them are full of good, solid advice. A third of them are a mix of good advice and useless advice, and a third of them are flat-out lies. Why do they publish them? They publish them because people click on them. People read them. You know, when I first started publishing my articles, I was a woman on a mission, and I'd write long and detailed responses on my blog to articles in places like even the Wall Street Journal printed that were written by really well-known people in the investments world until I finally figured out that people just do not care. I remember in 2009, I published a response to an article called The Death of Equities. It was published right after the worst of the financial crisis, and you might not remember, but there was this 10-year period where bonds actually outperformed stocks. And this person, surprise, surprise, manages huge bond funds. So he makes money when people like bonds. So he was loving this, and the money was pouring into his fund, basically because people, for the most part, don't have good advice, like I've been saying, and don't understand investments, and bonds aren't like stocks. When bonds go up in value, they don't keep going up in value. Bonds are like a seesaw, and they're related to interest rates, and rates had really plummeted, and that means all of the potential returns had essentially been wrung out of bonds, and it was impossible for bonds to keep going up. But of course, this person wasn't saying that. Instead, he published in the Wall Street Journal that the stock market was never going to provide high positive returns for investors like it had in the past. And that was a lie. It was a prediction that didn't come true, and it was a financial impossibility. And I published a good article in response, and I think about maybe 85 people read it, and probably 100,000 more people put their money in this person's bond funds. And then you know what? Bonds stayed flat or declined in value for 2 years, and we had 25 and 30% returns in the stock market during those following years. All the while, people were still talking about the so-called death of equities. Boom! And these kinds of examples are everywhere. I mean, most Wall Street commentators are just making things up. How do I know that? Because listen to what they say. They say things that sound good but don't make any sense when you think about them. Like, the stock market was up today because a lot of investors were buying. Right, that sounds good. But you know what? Everyone who buys a stock has to buy it from someone. So just as many people were selling as were buying. The Wall Street gurus could just have accurately have said the stock market was up today because a lot of investors were selling. Don't fall for the doublespeak. Also, I knew it would only take me 10 seconds to go find something else that would be completely useless to you. So sure enough, I just got right on Facebook, and in my feed right there is an article from a well-known brokerage house, a place where lots of financial advisors work. I'm not going to use their name, but the title of this article is, Are You Choosing the Right Financial Advisor? So there's about 8 or 9 questions here that they want you to get answered before you choose a financial advisor. And frankly, this article is completely useless. For example, this question, will you, not your advisor, decide your involvement? Some investors like to be very hands-on. Others like to turn over the decision-making to professionals. Why would you hire a financial advisor if you want to do your own trading? You should just go to E-Trade. But what we know from the data is that that's a huge mistake. There it just is no way that you have statistically any kind of decent chance of outperforming a simple buy and hold of the stock market. You shouldn't be making your own trades. So this isn't good advice. Here's another question. What's the financial advisor's investment style? Find out if the financial advisor favors one style of investing or a particular type of investment. Certain styles and investments might be well suited for you, but maybe not. If you believe the financial advisor has a one-size-fits-all approach, you may want to look elsewhere. What does this even mean? How are you supposed to evaluate the financial advisor's style, and how do you know if that person has a one-size-fits-all approach? It's not advice that's going to make a difference for you in the long run because it's not actionable. Most useless question in this article, how is the financial advisor paid? Now, the answer to this question actually is really relevant to you because you want to know if there are conflicts of interest in the relationship. So, but here it says the financial advisor should be able to speak clearly and honestly about fees. Is she commission-based or is the advisor paid a percentage based on the account's balance? If you don't understand her fees, keep asking until you do. Okay, but the analysis says absolutely nothing about the implications of that. And the implications are, if there is a commission paid on products that the advisor sells, there are probably conflicts of interest in the relationship. I mean, not probably, there are. And the truth is, most advisors don't reveal those conflicts of interest. But this article doesn't say that. And this is what I mean by really useless information. This article doesn't give you good guidance. So we've talked a little bit about bad predictions. We've talked about just flat out inaccurate information that gets published, and then this kind of useless stuff. And again, these kinds of examples are everywhere. So that's information on the internet. And I basically think internet research when it comes to your investments is of very little value. And that is seconded by this BlackRock data survey results. I said before, you can get good information. You just have no way to distinguish between the good information and the bad information. The only reason I know the difference between the articles that are solid and the articles that are so-so and the articles that are lies is because I do this for a living. I've read the academic papers and the original research. I'm not special. I learned it just like you could learn it, but I learned it where the rubber meets the road. I've applied investment strategies in real portfolios, and I've been through the tech crash of 2000 and the financial crisis of 2008, and I survived it, and my people thrived, and I know what actually happens in real people's investment portfolios. And that's the truth. I'm not here to sell you any products. I don't have undisclosed conflicts of interest with my clients, and I'm not selling schemes. And that's why you won't hear people selling investment methodologies on this show, because the people offering the real solutions that work are the academics who have proved it. So as far as parsing good information from the internet, I think you're really hard pressed to do it effectively. And I don't know how internet research is going to help you. And now here's where technology and modernization is your friend, because there's what technology has done for actual investment strategies. And that part is miraculous. At this point in the world, technology and entrepreneurial advances have made it possible for everyday investors to take advantage of incredible economies of scale and easily get invested in a world-class portfolio of investments at an extremely low cost. It's miraculous, provides tremendous value, and I hope you all take advantage of it. I utilize this kind of technology in my client portfolios. They seem so simple and elegant to my clients that sometimes my clients make the mistake of thinking there's nothing happening. And that's not true. It just doesn't have to involve a bunch of doomsaying and false prognosticating. We have nearly 100 years of actual stock market data that tells us the characteristics of the stock market. You might think stock market investing is like gambling, but it's not. It can be based on how you do it, but it shouldn't be. It's not when I do it. When you look at the big picture, there are trends and features that are consistent over time. The most important of those features is that for nearly 100 years, the global overall stock market has grown at an average of about 10% every single year. That's in the long run. And I shouldn't even say the words every single year because the return is actually very rarely 10%. So if I have 0% in year one and 20% in year two, that's 10% average. Actually, when it comes to the stock market, we know that in 67% of years, the return on global stocks is between negative 26 and positive 46%. Doesn't that sound crazy? And that's an average of 10%. It gets better, though. In 99% of tracked years, the returns in the stock market are between negative 44% and positive 64%. I know for some of you, your stomach just turned, and yet that's still an average of 10% per year. But those numbers and our own short-term focus as investors do give you a sense of why people make such tremendous and costly mistakes. We are focused on what's happening right freaking now. We want more money, more money, more money. And in a year where the stock market had negative 44% returns, the vast majority of people would sell out just like they did in 2008, lock in their losses and run scared. And what we know again is that they miss the incredible gains that so far have followed a stock market recession every single time it's ever occurred in the history of the stock market. Yeah, I said that right. So far, every single downturn in the market is followed by a robust recovery that vastly exceeds the preceding downturn. And the vast majority of investors completely miss it because they're scared, they're sitting in cash, and they're licking at their wounds. And then you run around telling people that you lost half your money in the market, and from now on, you're staying out of the market in cash or buying annuities or staying in bonds, or this is the one I love. I'm only going to buy real assets, stuff I can put my hands on, like businesses and real estate, which is utter nonsense because stocks are businesses. In real estate, nearly always underperforms the numbers I just shared with you. And that is a whole show just unto itself, Profit Boss. That's called asset class performance, and it's important that you know about it, but that is not for today. So the point is that yes, technology in the modern world is our friend when it comes to investing some of the time. So let's check back in with Holly and find out how prepared women are for the future.
We show that they've accumulated about $118,000. However, you know, as you know, that's not going to provide the income and retirement that they need. $118,000 today, if you're a woman between the age of 55 and 65, will only provide you about, you know, $7,800 of estimated annual retirement income.
Yeah.
Which is not going to be nearly, you know, what they're accustomed to. Yeah, I think understanding that, you know, the assets that you're accumulating, again, I think something the industry doesn't do a great job is educating people not on how much they have in assets or how they're performing, but rather, are they accomplishing the goals that I, as an investor, set out for myself? You know, am I going to have the income in retirement that I need? Because the asset number means nothing to me unless I understand how much income it's going to generate for me in retirement, if that's my goal.
Exactly, exactly. What does that number mean to me? And why would I strive for such a high number? So something really interesting I saw in the data was this consistent finding that no matter the income or savings bracket, there was this a big delta between how much income people wanted in retirement and how much their savings was actually going to be able to provide. So what do you think is the solution for that?
Yeah, I think, again, I think it's turning the asset conversation or the accumulation conversation. We're so accustomed in the industry, and even as investors through savings on our 401k investment plans and so forth, on being disciplined about saving for investing. And you look at the value on your statement every month, every quarter, in terms of how much you've accumulated towards your goal, but no one's having the conversation about what does that do for me in terms of providing me the income. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done at BlackRock is we have something called Cost of Retirement Index, or CORI, which basically estimates the annual retirement income, looks at the cost of retirement, looking at inflation, so that people can start to have a conversation less about the accumulation phase and recognize that the baby boomers are now getting to a point where they need to turn that accumulation stage into a distribution stage in order to live off of the retirement income that is necessary for them.
Holly makes an excellent point here that most people don't really understand what they're saving for, or specifically how savings goals for the future impact your future lifestyle. So a rule of thumb that you should know is that for every $40,000 you want to live in retirement, that's an annual income, gross income before taxes, you need about $1 million saved in an investment portfolio. Depending on what kind of investment solution you've got, actually $1 million saved can produce between $30,000 and $55,000 or $60,000 per year in retirement income. That's every year over an average 30-year retirement. And yes, the nuances of those numbers are a very complex topic, and I'm not going to get into it here. It's enough for you to know that it matters what you hold, what you're invested in, because those payout rates differ. The investment solutions I use have my clients at the high end of that range, but that gives you a sense of why Holly is saying that that $118,000 that the average BlackRock survey female respondent has saved isn't going to afford her very much or buy her very much at all. And those numbers that I just gave you depend on things like investment return and inflation rate and your savings rate. And BlackRock is offering you this tool Holly is introducing to help you make sense of those things.
We have something, and all of your listeners, I'd encourage them to go online. We have a tool that we've developed that uses the cost of retirement index that BlackRock developed and uses that as an input. But the tool is called iRetire, and you can go to our website, blackrock.com, and look for the iRetire tool. It is a way for you to put in your accumulated savings that you've had so far, what age you intend to retire, and then what income you'd like to receive in retirement. And there are basically different bars, and you can play with those bars to understand exactly where your shortfall is and then what you may need to do in order to close that gap. And it could be that you intended to retire at the age of 55, but you realize, oh, geez, in order to achieve the lifestyle that I want in retirement, I need to work until I'm 63. Or in order to retire now, I have to understand that it's going to mean I have less income in retirement. So there are various different sort of toggle switches that allow you to get a better understanding and get more educated about how each of those things interact with one another.
And I'll put the link to that iRetire tool in the show notes so you can access it easily. Just go to hillaryhendershot.com/11, and it's right there. And this is a calculation I do with my clients and with the students in my programs. And I'm so glad that BlackRock is offering you a way to look at what are the trade-offs. If I spend more now, which means I'll save less for the future, what does that mean for me in the future? And when you're tying that future dollar amount into what it makes possible for you in terms of income after you stop working, that's when things get really real. And that's what's going to help you strive for what's possible and stay on track so that it doesn't feel like discipline and sacrifice. I mean, what most people want is to know that they can live well today and tomorrow. And that knowing comes from being empowered with information. So I think today we've really focused on some widespread errors in thinking. And now it's going to make sense to you why I'm rarely impressed when consumer sentiment data says people are feeling good or confident, because I do know what's happening in real people's financial lives, and feeling confident isn't always tied to being properly prepared. We're emotional creatures. I mean, who really knows what we base our confidence on? And of course, the inverse is true. Sometimes people are feeling really discouraged when they've actually done really well. And this is why I'm on record as saying that people are basically crazy when it comes to money, myself included. Crazy. I love you, Profit Boss, but you are crazy. So what can we do to maximize the chances of achieving the things that are important to us?
Well, I think just having a plan in general. You know, oftentimes there are periods of market volatility like we've experienced in the first few months of 2016. If you don't have a disciplined plan, it becomes really difficult to stay invested. And I think one of the biggest mistakes we see investors make is they react emotionally to what's happening in the market and go to cash. And I think the data we talked about earlier with you supports that. That may be related to why so many people are holding on to cash in their portfolios, because they're acting emotionally instead of understanding that, you know, you should be taking advantage of this as a way to dollar cost average into the investments that, you know, you put in place as it relates to your financial plan. And if you don't have the plan to keep you on course, then it's going to force you to make maybe an emotional or knee-jerk reaction when otherwise wouldn't be the case. And so, you know, I think about it like I do having a trainer. I don't love having a trainer. I know I could get on the scale every day and see what I weigh, but I need that trainer to keep me disciplined and hold me accountable. And I think a plan does that for investors. If you have a financial plan that you put together that helps you understand what you need to do today in order to achieve the goals that you set out for yourself. We spent a lot of time today talking about retirement, but it could be other things like, you know, paying to send your children to college or buying that second home or taking the vacations, you know, once a year that you'd like to take with your family. But when you have a plan, it provides the discipline so that you don't get sidetracked by what's happening in the markets on a day-to-day basis.
There's another pitfall here, though, because women turn out to be far more inclined to sacrifice the long-term plan for short-term wants.
Yeah, no, I think that it ties back to one of the things we talked about earlier, which is men tend to view themselves as investors and they judge their success based on the accumulation of wealth.
Yeah.
Women are responsible for sort of the day-to-day, month-to-month family budgeting. And so as a result of that, they tend to be more short-term oriented. They also tend to not focus on the future. And most importantly, they prioritize many other things over their own retirement. Okay. Men do not prioritize other things over, you know, their investing or their retirement for themselves. Women, when asked, will prioritize many things, like making sure that everything they need to budget for in the household is taken care of, making sure that, you know, their children are going to go to the schools that they'd like to go to, making sure that their children, you know, get married in the location that they'd like to get married. Mm. They prioritize other things for their families over their own retirement. And that comes through in the data, at least, that we've seen. And yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it.
We care about what money enables for our families and tend to sacrifice our own futures at that altar. Yet another reason it's critical for you to have a behavioral advisor on your team. We do know that our cognitive biases really get in our way. And just like you have a personal trainer at the gym to push you that extra mile, to get you through that last rep and to make sure you understand what the costs truly are when you eat that medium pizza for lunch, you take yourself back a full week of progress. So too, do you need a behavioral advisor who understands these nuances and can coach them so you can consistently avoid mistakes. I'm constantly having these conversations with clients. Okay, I know that you don't want to go back to work now that the baby is here. So rather than have an emotion-based conversation about that, because I'm sure you're already getting plenty of that, let's have the trade-offs conversation. What's that going to mean for your future? What real intangible things are you not going to have in the future if you deviate from the plan now? And you know what? Then you're empowered to make the choice. Just being in the full knowing of the long-term costs of your choices. As Holly says, when you put your perspective on the long term, you can truly avoid regrets and feel confident about the future.
Right.
So, Holly, what would you say is the most important thing women can take from this BlackRock survey data, or what would you want women to know today?
I think that they need to understand that they're in control, right? That they own it, that, you know, they can control their own destiny. And so by becoming educated and understanding, as you just mentioned, the link between savings and investing and income and date of retirement, those things are all within your control. And when you understand how they are linked together, you know, I think that it will be more encouraging to women to know that they're empowered and that they can control it.
Thank you for saying something so empowered. That was so great. I wrote that down. You're in control. I love it. There you have it, Profit Boss. From Holly and from me, your host, Hillary Hendershot, you are in control. You have agency and power to impact your future. So say to yourself now, today, if it is to be, it's up to me. Profit Boss Radio is here as your resource to rely on, your wealth mastermind. Check in here each week for a shot in the arm of the real deal data. And as a touchstone, you are in the driver's seat, and with the right partnership and advice, you can have everything you desire. Thank you, Profit Boss. And don't forget to check out the show notes today at hillaryhendershot.com/11 for a link to the iRetire tool. If you'd like to have an authentic conversation with me about your investments and plans, you can find contact information there, or just shoot us an email to request an appointment at hillary@hillaryhendershot.com. Stay tuned in the coming weeks for some really useful advice. Next week, Laura McClellan of the Productive Woman Podcast and I discuss how to maximize productivity and profit, and how the tenets of productivity can help you be even more effective financially. And then a very special, it's my first series, okay? It's a special 2-week Love and Money series where I'm featuring interviews with Elle Martinez of the Couple Money blog and podcast and the incredible Arielle Ford, priestess of love and best-selling author of Make Your Mate Your Soulmate. For those of you who want to love your money and love your partner and just want those tools for financial harmony, you're going to love these shows. If you enjoyed the show, I sure hope you'll click subscribe and then download a bunch of episodes so you can take them with you anywhere you go, especially on your private jet. And you don't even have to send me a free kitten, but if you'd really like to make my day, I'd be forever grateful if you would be so kind as to review my show on iTunes. I heard that people who leave iTunes reviews get free back rubs. I don't know from who, but if I find out, I'll tell you. But I do know for sure that you'd make my day if you'd subscribe to the show and rate and review it today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.